You're listening to Loving BDSM Podcast, episode 49. Hey everybody, Kayla Lords here. Today we're talking about dominance, their emotions, and how a submissive can support their dominant when they let us. Welcome to the Loving BDSM Podcast. If this is your first time listening, glad to have you. If you're back for another week, welcome back. Loving BDSM is produced every Friday for your kinky pleasure and education, and show notes are found at kaylalords.com. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. If you love what you hear, we'd love a good review on iTunes to help other kinksters find us. You can follow me on Twitter, at Kayla Lords, or stalk John Brownstone at southernsirsplace.com. All links are in the show notes. The 1 year anniversary of Loving BDSM is almost here. Yay! And yes, the giveaway is still on. We talked about it a little bit last week. And no, I have no more details than I had last week. I'm blaming back to school hell on why I haven't gotten anything done at all this week that I was supposed to. That's my reason and I'm sticking with it. But just be on the lookout for the information and know that it will be a prize pack of stuff that we like, John Brownstone and I, that we like from kinky stores that we recommend. So it'll be good, promise. Okay, let's get into the show. So today, if you can't tell, a certain someone is not with me this week, but that's okay. He's had his own stuff going on, and I had a sort of a timely topic to talk about. Ooh, goodness. I got an email from a pretty good friend of mine who's also submissive, who had seen something on FetLife, one of the groups she's in, where Dominant had sort of put out there that there were times, you know, they'd had to go away for work and it was sort of a stressful time for them, that they needed their submissive to do specific tasks in order to, quote, be there for them, to sort of mentally and emotionally support them during whatever was making this time of their life kind of rough. And apparently that particular dominant worried that somehow needing their submissive to be there for them, to emotionally support them, somehow made them less dominant. So of course, thankfully, in this thread where the comments were happening, people were very supportive and said, oh no, that's absolutely normal and fine and there's nothing wrong with it. But my friend sent me an email and said, I think you need to talk about that because I think that's kind of something that dominants believe in. I'm sure there are some submissives out there who believe that dominants are always supposed to be strong. So she's not wrong. She's completely right. I get on to John Brownstone all the time for thinking he's supposed to be, you know, the man of steel. Not like that guy in steel. He should be that man of steel all the time. Anyway, he's supposed to never show his emotions or be vulnerable or kind of let me in when, you know, things are bothering him. And he and I are at such a point in our relationship where I don't have to remind him of that very often. Every once in a while it'll happen, but we are completely supportive of one another, regardless of what's going on in our lives. Now, on the show, we have actually talked about why submissives won't always let our dominants take care of us in different ways. It's usually a physical, sometimes emotional way. I believe it's episode 29, but I'll link to it in the show notes if you haven't heard it. But now I think it's time to turn the focus and talk about our dominants and talk to dominants who may be listening to remind y'all that it is okay to allow your submissive to see you in a more vulnerable position, to allow your emotions to show through from time to time, or more of the time, or all the time, depending on your dynamic, and that, you know, you don't always have to be completely and totally in control. Now, let me just put a caveat, because somebody is going to get themselves twisted in a knot that I then think I'm saying that dominants don't need to be controlled. No. This is not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about in a scene. I'm not talking about when you are clearly in the middle of your power exchange with your submissive. I don't even mean in your normal, everyday, life is pretty decent, typical, you know, interactions with each other. Absolutely. Whatever your level of comfort is as a dominant, where your control lies, that's yes. Do you, do your thing, be who you are. But there are times in life where it gets rough. Shit goes down. There's a shit storm in your life and you're thinking, holy crap, what the hell's going on? I need something a little bit more. And not every DS relationship has room for this kind of vulnerability. But if you are in what, or looking for what a lot of us want and are looking for, a loving, long-term relationship that, oh, by the way, is also DS, there's absolutely room to relinquish a little bit of your steely control and allow your emotions to show through. So it's easier to think about the good emotions, right? To laugh and to smile. And I know some dominants that they do not even show those emotions. They truly believe that to show their emotions is, you know, a lapse of control. Well, I don't agree with that. They're not my dominant, so I guess I don't care. And I haven't heard of their submissives being miserable, so I really don't care then. But for the most part, for most of us, showing emotion, good or bad, regardless of which part of the slash you're on, you know, D or S, it's okay. You know, in my relationship with John Brownstone, we do have a very relaxed protocol. We have our own sort of protocol. I know what is acceptable, and I know when I can, you know, put a toe over the line. We have figured some of that out as we've been together. Every relationship will be different. You know, you may be in a high protocol relationship where there's a very strict hierarchy and there's a very strict way you are supposed to behave. I would imagine whatever emotional release you have, laughter or tears, may sometimes come as a surprise. You know, if you are following the rules all the time and that's what you're focused on, you know, it may be a little bit of a jolt to start teasing one another, or at least it may be a jolt for somebody watching that to kind of look on your very strict high protocol relationship and go, oh, wow, they tease one another. Because anybody who's in a relationship where you have that kind of openness with the other person, regardless of your protocol, it just becomes who you are, right? The amount you do it, that's individual, that's personal to your relationship, that's based on your individual personality, it's based on the personality of the actual dynamic that you have, it's based on how you interact with one another. Well, I'm sure y'all have all noticed, all you have to do is listen to one show with the two of us in it, we are extremely relaxed. I know what I can, for the most part, what I can get away with and what I can't. And so I tease him a lot and we laugh and joke, and that is a big part of who we are. We have a lot of fun until it's not so fun and I'm in trouble, or the fun turns more to power exchange than to playfulness, right? But those are the good emotions, and those are easier to show. You know, if you're a little leery of showing your emotions, it's not usually that you're leery of laughing with your submissive. It's that you don't want them to see the other side. You don't want them to see you stressed or hurt or sad. Well, I'm here to tell you that for the most part, you need to get over that. I know that that sounds awful. I feel like I've just been really rude. I'm sorry. But it is. It is okay to show your emotions. It is okay to admit in a long distance relationship, or when it's the first time you've had to be apart from one another, whether because of work or family obligations or whatever, that it upsets you. I promise you, most of the time your submissive will be the first one to go, I don't like this. This makes me sad. This stresses me out. It is okay in your own way, because it'll probably be different than the way your submissive expresses their emotions, to say the same thing, to admit the same thing. Now, I'm not completely Pollyanna about it, you know, Pippi Longstockings, oh, that was great, right? It's trust. Okay, it's trust in the relationship, and there's a certain amount of faith that you have that your submissive won't respond negatively. So yes, the first few times you allow yourself to admit that you're not happy about something, and I don't mean with your submissive, I mean that, you know, work's got you down, or, you know, somebody's sick, or you just miss your submissive, whatever it may be, the first couple times it's going to be a lot harder than once you realize that they can handle it. But trust is built, okay? It takes time. It takes communication. It takes believing enough in your relationship and what you're seeing in your relationship to say, okay, let's test this out. Let me admit something that I maybe wouldn't normally tell them. How do they react to it? If you're in even a halfway decent relationship with somebody who understands that, yes, you're dominant, they're submissive, but you're both people first, you're not necessarily going to get a bad reaction. You may get a, oh, I'm so sorry. Or you may get a, oh, what can I do to help? And that's always my thing. When daddy says, I'm stressed, I'm hurt, I'm this, I'm that, I'm a fixer. That's who I am by nature. So my very first thing is to go, oh my gosh, what can I do to help? What do you need for me? And sometimes all he needs is for me to sit down and shut up and listen to him. And he'll tell me in a very nice way, I just need you to listen. I add the shut up part in my head. That's the part of my head going, okay, don't talk. Just let him talk. Just listen. Just look at him. Just smile. He doesn't need advice. He just needs you to be there. And that for some of us is like, for me, that's what I have to do because I want to jump in and I want to fix. But that's not always what's needed. But other submissives might not know how to handle it. And for those of y'all out there who are thinking, but dominants don't ever show emotion. Okay, I don't know who you know, but I have not met a dominant yet that once they got comfortable with who they were with, would not show some emotion, okay? No matter what you read in erotica, no matter what you see in porn, no matter what fantasy life you find online, DS is always between people. First, we are human beings first with emotions and feelings and life getting in the way first, okay? A lot of us have found our way to allow the DS part to sort of sit on top of all of that so that when life gets rough, you can fall back on the DS. You can go back to those roles and say, okay, this is where I feel most at peace, most centered, and let me do this thing that we do, and it'll get me through a rough time or a rough patch or a rough feeling. But sometimes whatever you're feeling still needs to be expressed, and sometimes whatever you're going through is bigger than your DS. And so, yes, there will be times when a dominant cannot show, well, not show, can, how do I want to word that? Where they will have to show how they feel, or they might explode, or they should show how they feel. Okay, so if you as a submissive are surprised when a dominant says, you know, I'm kind of sad, or this was really shitty, or I really miss you, I'm going to need you to check your expectations. That sounds crazy, but that's what I'm going to need you to do. Okay, but dominance on the other end, I need you to give up this idea that you are somehow supposed to always, always, always have steely control over every single emotion you feel. There is a difference between having control of your emotions and expressing those emotions, okay? It is not a weakness to say, I miss you. I'm asking for this picture of you because it makes me happy. It is not a weakness to say, I am really sad right now. Can we just sit here and be together? Let me give you the best example I know. And it just happened in the past week. And I hope I can kind of get through this without getting too emotional myself. So John Brownstone gives me a lot of latitude to share the guts of our relationship. And I know he's not going to be mad at me for telling you this. So anybody who's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're saying this, he will admit this kind of thing. Okay, so here we go. A few days ago today, I'm recording on August 11th. You will ideally be listening on August 13th. So just over a week ago, 2 weeks ago, was the 1 year anniversary of the day his sister died. Now, anybody who's ever experienced a death, in your family or somebody that you're close to, knows that even when you try not to think about that 1 year mark, it will jump up and bite you in the ass. I've been through it a few times, more than I'd ever like to have to admit. And time doesn't heal grief. It just softens the edges. And 1 year is not a lot of time. Okay. So if you've never experienced a death, I'm just telling you, after a year, that's sometimes the grief is just as fresh as the day after or the day it happened. So it was over the weekend when the 1 year mark hit, and I knew it was coming. He had said something to me a couple days before because he had seemed off, and we have that relationship where when something's not right, I go, Daddy, what's wrong with you? And I sort of expect an answer in my baby girl way, in my submissive baby girl way, I expect a damn answer. So he had said, you know, the anniversary of, and he didn't even have to finish the sentence and it clicked and realized what part of the month we were in. And I said, okay, I totally get it. So I watched out for him, but I gave him space too, okay? Because I think that's part of the problem some people, especially men, but not always, but some people feel with expressing their emotions is that somebody's going to be like all over them when that's not what they want. They don't want to tell you they're sad and then have somebody, you know, hovering over them, desperate to make them not sad. And he's like that. And I understand that and I respect that. So I backed off a little bit because I said earlier, I'm a fixer, but grief is not something that can be fixed. You just have to sort of ride through it and try and make it out to, you know, one end of it, knowing that that's not really the end. It's just sort of a gap, right? So here we are at this point, the 1 year mark. So over the weekend, he pretty much slept all weekend. Now, granted, he had been tired from work and he'd had things going on and stress and all this stuff, but it was his emotions, you know, taking a toll on him, and it made him tired. And the best escape is just to sleep. And there was no way I was going to say a word against that. I'm like, you sleep as much as you need to. So he kept falling asleep on the couch almost the whole weekend. And me and the boys just got quieter. I read a lot. They played in their room. The boys didn't know what was going on, but they respected the fact that, oh, here he is. He's sleeping on the couch for like 4 hours. Well, at one point he woke up and, you know, it's sometimes you ask a question that you know the answer to, but you don't ask to get an answer. You just sort of ask to check on them, right? So I'm standing at the sink washing dishes, cleaning up the kitchen, and he had just woken up, come out of the bathroom. He's all groggy. You know that kind of nap where you're like, okay, what year is it now? He had that kind of nap. And I just sort of looked at him and I said, you doing okay? Now, y'all, we know what the answer is. He was making it. He was surviving the day. But it wasn't like he was really happy. I didn't expect him to say anything. I didn't expect him to have an answer. All I was trying to do in a very, you know, laid back, hands off kind of way was say, you know, I know it's bad. I'm here for you. Do you want to talk about it? Okay. Now, I could have said all that, but that was just our way. It's part of, we've communicated so much for long enough now that we don't have to go into a lot of detail. We know what the other one means. And he just sort of nodded and I kept washing dishes and I looked up at him and he just looked lost, you know, just that sad, lost look that you feel when somebody you love is gone and is never coming back. And I just said, I am so sorry, Daddy. And you know, my hand, I'm up to my elbows in suds, you know, I'm at the sink, you know, I wasn't at a point where I'm not that person who can walk across her clean kitchen floor and drip water. I don't care how sad you are. I don't think I can do it. So he came into the kitchen and he wrapped his arms around me and my back was pressed into his chest and he pulled me close tight. I mean, I don't remember the last time he held me that tight and he just cried. He cried for probably 5 minutes and I stood there and I let him. And when I kind of felt like maybe he cried himself out, I turned around and I pulled him close and I hugged him. Now, there are some people who would say that that's not a very dominant thing to do. You know what? Maybe it is, maybe it's not. It's a very human thing to do. His little sister died a year ago and it sucks. And it sucks whenever anybody that we love dies. We can never get them back and we will never be completely over it. Okay. My dad died 14 years ago. Yeah. 14 years ago. There are times I can still cry over it. You know, I have dealt with it. I've learned how to live with the fact, but get me in the right frame of mind, I'll cry my eyes out. Okay. This is just the nature of it. That's how, you know, grief tends to work. But if he was the type of person to think that he wasn't allowed to show his emotions, that's the kind of thing that would have gotten bottled up inside and it would have exploded out in a bad way. It would have exploded out in anger or in stress or, you know, for John Brownstone, when he is stressed mentally and emotionally, it manifests physically. His back hurts, his neck hurts, you know. For me, it's my stomach, right? So it has to come out some way. And if it doesn't come out through sharing the actual emotional experience, that feeling, that tension, whatever that is, whatever that negative emotion is going to come out in another way. He is better now for anybody who's, yeah, my heart's breaking telling the story. And every time I think about it, I'm deeply, deeply sad for him. So for anybody who's worried about our John Brownstone, he is good now. He is handling it. He's moved on past that milestone and there will be others, you know, He's already done the first all the first holidays since her death, but even the second holidays aren't any better. You know, her next birthday, Christmas, those all suck. They just do. Okay. I still have moments 14 years later. I'm like, God, I wish my dad was here. You know, it happens. So I'll give you another example of how when you don't say something, it comes out bad. Okay. So yesterday morning. Yeah. Okay. We have not slept well in this house for a couple of weeks for different reasons. And I'm actually trying a new sleep routine to help me sleep better at night. And I'm dragging John Brownstone along with me. If he could, he'd stay up every night way too late reading a book or doing something online. And I'm like, no, we gotta go to bed, daddy. We gotta go to bed. So even with all of this trying new stuff to get better sleep, we are not sleeping well. We keep waking up. We're tossing and turning. Ugh, it sucks. So I expect him to be a little cranky in the morning when he has not slept. As we discussed in last week's show, he is not one you talk to until he's had a cup of coffee. Coffee is his love language. So yesterday morning, I got up before him was, you know, it was the first day of school for my kids. So I was dealing with that. I was getting him ready for work. I was getting myself ready. There was all this stuff going on. And I accidentally tried to ask him a question before he'd had his first cup of coffee. I don't know what I was thinking either. And he like bit my head off. But I was busy. And two, I went, oops, I said something to him before coffee. So I didn't think about what, you know, his reaction. It was harsh. It was not his typical kind of growly crankiness. It was sharp biting, like, ooh, okay. In any other situation, it would have upset me. We might have like had an argument over it. Well, later that day, he said, you know, I was mentioning something about what he had said. And he said, I am really sorry for my reaction this morning. I do have a reason for it. And I want to talk to you about it tonight when I get home. Now, when my dominant or any person in a position of authority over me says, I have something I need to talk about with you later, and you don't want to talk about it right then, I have a few things that go through my mind. And I asked him, are we okay? We're fine. Okay. I'm just checking. Have I done anything wrong? Kayla, baby girl, you're fine. Okay. Is everything okay? It'll be fine. We'll talk about it later. Well, now, of course, I'm in a little bit of panic mode, right? Fast forward, we're sitting at the dinner table, all four of us. He and I still have not talked about whatever this mysterious thing is. And we're eating chili. Yes, Florida summer, and I made a pot of chili. It's the baby's favorite food, and it was first day of school, and I was trying to be nice, and 90-degree weather, and we had chili, whatever. So the boys have learned from John Brownstone about crumbling up crackers to put in your chili. Now, some of you are going, yeah, well, I don't do it, but people do it. The boys love to do it. I think they just love to crumble the crackers, but whatever. So my youngest takes his crackers and just smushes them to dust, which means his hands are now covered in cracker dust. And there's cracker dust everywhere. And John Brownstone is very protective of me. And he hates when somebody gives me extra work. He hates it when the boys make an extra mess that he knows I'll clean up. He hates it when, you know, a client of mine does it. He's like, just leave my baby girl alone, which is very sweet. He's very protective. Well, plus, who wants cracker dust all over the table while you're eating in general? So he kind of bites the head off of the kid who's made cracker dust. And I put, you know, I do not contradict daddy in front of the boys, especially when dealing with boys. That's kind of a good parenting rule in general. And I learned my lesson from, you know, my previous marriage. We are on one accord even when I don't agree. And I didn't disagree with him. For me, it wasn't as big of a deal as it was for him. And I knew his reaction was right along the lines of the reaction I'd gotten that morning before he'd had coffee. So I just put one hand on his arm and I saw daddy take a deep breath and just sort of sit back. And then I turned to the little one who's, you know, lower lip is quivering and the eyes are filling with tears. Not because what daddy had said to him was really all that bad, but because he's a beautiful crier and he's the baby and he knows or thinks he knows that if he will cry, shed the beautiful tears, that he is no longer in trouble. So I dealt with the crackers and I kind of tried to soothe daddy and, you know, we finished dinner in peace. So, but his reaction was bigger than the moment warranted. So later, we're sitting, he's having his cigar, drinking a cup of coffee, way earlier than his normal cup of coffee, but whatever. And I said, okay, what's going on? You are not right, and you're not behaving in your normal way. What is going on? So he kind of steals himself to make this big momentous announcement. I'm thinking, oh my God, what? Did he get fired and he hasn't told me yet? By the way, he did not get fired, so nobody's panicking. He has a very bad back, and I mean, he's had to have epidurals in order to deal with the pain. It is so bad. They're trying to avoid surgery because back surgery very rarely actually helps back problems. They usually exacerbate them. So he says, my back has been bothering me with this new position at work that I didn't want in the first place. I'm in constant back pain. I'm not sleeping at night because I can't get comfortable. I'm practically eating ibuprofen like they're candy. And now my neck hurts because I'm sitting bad and I'm tense. And I said, Daddy, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. Let's call the doctor. Let's do that. So I went into that mode. And then I looked at him and said, Daddy, you know, you could have told me this 7 hours ago. For him, it was this big thing that needed a major announcement. It was this thing I think that he thought was going to stress me out. So he wanted to have a very calm, quiet moment to tell me. My point of this, dominants who are listening, and submissives, but dominants, when you hold back your pain, physical or otherwise, when you hold back your stress, when you don't tell your submissive what the hell is going on, first of all, your reactions to small stressors are much bigger than they're supposed to be, which as the person in control of the relationship, you are the one sort of steering kind of the mood of the relationship. And I'll tell you from a submissive's perspective, and this is how I am in general, I am watching my dominant. How does he feel? How is he reacting to a situation? And it guides how I feel about things. Yes, I'm completely autonomous. I have my own emotions and feelings. I have my own thoughts. Absolutely. But I feed off of his emotions. When his emotions are negative, guess whose emotions are also negative? Especially if I don't know why. So I am a people watcher. I have learned from childhood. It was a coping mechanism to deal with a parent with major anger issues. I know to watch people and wait for their reaction so that I know how to react. Are you having a good day and you're being nice and playful? Well, then I get to be nice and playful. Oh, you're having a bad day and you're stressed out and life's shitty for you? Well, guess what? I'm going to react in a way not to piss you off more, right? So that's something that I've carried through my entire life, okay? So it happens with John Brownstone as well. I do the same thing. Now, it's different and yet it's not, because I'm also a submissive, so I'm trying to make him happy and I'm trying to please him. And if I can watch him and try and figure out what mood he's in, I know best how to please him. So here's what happens. Through no fault of his own, I am in no way upset with him or angry with him or hurt or anything. It's one of those human moments that you're going to have in a DS relationship. He was physically in pain and he's still stressed out about work, and we're totally dealing with it, don't worry, as best we can. And it was causing him to not sleep. It was causing him further physical pain. Pain is, anybody who's ever dealt with chronic pain can tell you, it's a thing that will make you go insane because you cannot get away from it. It is with you always. And when you can't even go to sleep to get away with it, it's even worse. It makes the pain, even if the pain is not, you know, empirically, scientifically worse, it feels worse because you're exhausted and you're stressed and it's this thing that is with you all the time. But he was reacting to us in bigger ways than the situation warranted because of how he felt. And he had not told me. It had been going on for a couple of days minimum at that point, and he hadn't said anything. So my point, very long story, to the point is, you need to speak up, especially when you're in a DS relationship where you are together all the time. If I am with you every waking moment that you are in this house, I need to know what the hell's going on with you. I cannot help you. I cannot serve you properly. I can't even get out the hell out of your way if I don't know what's going on. And that is how it is for either side, okay? So submissives, if something's going on with you, that's why you have to talk to your dominant. They cannot effectively lead you in the relationship if they don't know that there's a problem, right? They could accidentally do more harm. They could make things worse for you. Whatever. It's no different for dominants who are in a situation where they're sad, they're lonely, they miss you, they're in physical pain, they're stressed out. It doesn't matter what's going on in life, those emotions are there. Nobody is able to completely shut out every single one of those emotions. And if you are, You're either on really good drugs or you've got some amount of steely control that's just inhuman, okay? Eventually, no matter how long you hold back an emotion, especially a negative one, it will seep through and it will affect the people around you, okay? Real dominance, and real men, by the way, cry. Real dominance say, I am sad, I am lonely, I hurt. You don't have to say it all the time. You don't even have to always admit it right when it happens. You know, maybe you need some time to process your emotions before you can talk about them. Okay. That's okay. And I understand. I think back to the example of what prompted this episode where my friend sent me the email. That particular dominant was traveling for work for whatever reason and missed their submissive. He missed his submissive, and these pictures that he was asking for allowed him to feel more connected. And I'm reading through the lines here based on the email I got. Allowed him to feel more connected. I understand that there are some dominants who do not think they have to give a justification for why they've asked their submissive to do something, okay? There's this idea that, well, I'm the dominant. I told you to do it. You said you would do it, so do it. You don't need to know why. And I get that, and there are a lot of times that that's absolutely true. In my relationship with John Brownstone, I have the freedom to go, can you tell me why? I will, but is there a reason? He understands I have a natural curiosity and I just like to know stuff. So he indulges me. And sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes he says, you don't need to know right now. You'll figure it out. You'll find out later. No. And sometimes that's just a mind fuck and it's his control and we both get off on that. But it is okay if you have a reason why you enjoy something or why you've tasked your submissive with something. When it's to help you on an emotional level, it's okay to say, you know, thank you for sending me this. It brightens my day when you do. Because most 99% of submissives, I don't really care what kind of relationship you're in, how loving or if it's platonic or whatever, we want to please our dominance. That's why we do what we do. If we've decided to submit to you, yeah, we're getting off ourselves. We're getting a need of our own fulfilled. But part of that is pleasing our dominant, is being the good girl or the good boy for our dominant. So if you tell us, you know, when you send me this picture of, you know, your genitalia, you know, cock, you know, a picture of your cock, a picture of your pussy, because and it makes me happy, okay? If you say that to your submissive, most of the time, the very next one you get, one is much more creative. You get them quicker. You probably get more of them. Why? Because you've just told us, you've just given us inside information of what's making you happy. And if it's helping you deal with negative emotions, that's even sort of bigger and more important because now we're truly being of service to you, okay? For those of you who, and John Brownstone does this to me, who do not or will not share your negative emotions with your submissive and when you're upset and when you're stressed and when you're sad, because you do not think we can handle it. And there are times you do have to sort of, you know, if there's a mental health issue that your submissive is facing, yes, you might have to walk sort of a fine line of, is this a good moment or not? I get that. But when you say you don't want to burden us with that, you don't think we can handle it, you don't want us to have to handle it, here's what I say to you, okay? Most of us who do this DS thing have a pretty clear opinion on the strength of a submissive. It requires strength of character and strength of self to submit to another person. It's not something you sometimes automatically have as a submissive. Sometimes it's built over time because, you know, sometimes it's a leap of faith that allows a submissive to go, yes, you may have control over me. And then the more control they give you is because you've earned their trust and they understand that they can do that and their strength and their power increases by doing it. Okay, so if I am strong enough to handle our power exchange, then guess what? I'm certainly strong enough to be told that you're having, you know, you're going through a crisis. You're having a bad day. Somebody died. Somebody's sick. You think you might lose your job. Okay, if I can handle the, I want you to wear this blindfold and not know what's going to happen to your body for the next hour, I can handle life really sucks right now. And when I ask you to do something, please do it quickly because it makes me happy. Okay. I think most of us are probably like that. If you are really new to submissive, or if you've had some submission, or you've had some really bad experiences, you may have to grow into that ability and that belief in yourself that you can handle all parts of your relationship. But those of us who've been doing it a while, those of us who were fairly confident people before submission, we know this to be true, okay? And dominance, your submissive wants nothing more than to serve you, okay? It's why we are submissives. We serve, we submit. We submit to your will, we submit to your control, we submit to your power. We want to give you what you want. Now, sometimes what you want is to be left alone and not to have to talk about what's pissing you off or upsetting you. I respect that. I think a lot of us do that, regardless of who we are and how we do our kink and all that, okay? But I cannot take care of you if I do not know what's wrong. And I tell John Brownstone this all the time. If he tries to do that, well, it'll be fine. I go, I cannot take care of you if I don't know what's going on. And my own sense of intuition, because I know him and I know his moods and I know his facial expressions and I know how he is. We're at that point. I know when something's not right. I know when something's off. If you've been in a DS relationship with your submissive for long enough for them to get to that point where they just sort of know, I think you owe it to them to tell them. Tell them in your own way. Tell them when you think you're ready to tell them. I mean, and they may have to wait. And that's part of DS too. I might want to desperately know something that's going on with John Brownstone, but he is ultimately in control. So he will tell me when he's ready to tell me. What I try to do as his submissive is to show that one, I can handle it. Two, I can be supportive. And three, I am here to help him through those things. That is me taking care of him. That is me serving him, okay? Not just submitting to his wishes and his whims, but serving him, okay? And the more I show him that, the quicker I can get him to tell me stuff. So the very first time you admit, even to a small moment of I miss you, or I'm pissed off about traffic, or my ex is crazy, or whatever the issue might be that's got you kind of riled up, the very first time you do it is sort of a leap of faith, because you might not know how they'll react. I will tell you, if your submissive reacts badly in a way that's in no way supportive and gives you the that's not, you know, you're supposed to be the dom, what the hell's wrong with you, you need to rethink that relationship really, really fast, okay? Because those kinds of things in life are going to happen all the time. We don't stop being human beings just because we get into kink, y'all. We don't stop having bad days. We don't stop having emotional outbursts. We don't stop getting sad. We don't stop getting sick. We don't stop. None of that stops just because you decided to call yourself a dominant or a submissive, okay? None of that stops. So if that kind of emotional support is important to you, and I'm a firm believer that everybody needs that kind of emotional support, even if you don't think it's important right now, if you take that chance in a new relationship and you open up even a little bit and their reaction is bad, and it's not because they're immature and they need to learn more, it's just they have really awful ideas about how they think you're supposed to be as a dominant, that's a moment to reassess your relationship. I think, though, most of the time you are going to find, even if it's not a forever relationship, most people are very sympathetic, and a lot of people will try to be empathetic. Most people have gone through a loss. Most people have gone through job stress. Most people have missed somebody. And if you're in a long distance relationship, or you're separated for any amount of time, work or family or whatever, you both miss one another. Could you please just admit it? Your submissive is going to tell you all the time how much they miss you. It is okay to say, God, I miss you too. I love it when you send me that picture every morning. It absolutely brightens my day. First of all, you'll get a lot more of those pictures, like I said before, and you have just given your submissive a direct line into how do I take care of my dominant. They miss me. They're sad. I'm going to do all kinds of things. Listen up, submissives. I'm going to do all kinds of things to help them through that until we get to be together again. So I think I went into lecture mode, and I'm really sorry. But, you know, I have, through my own experience with my former dominant and now John Brownstone. So let me give you that real quick. My former dominant, my very first dominant, he broke up with me Oh, and by the way, for anybody who's interested, John Brownstone and I are going to do some episodes on breakups and how to handle them. So that's coming up. Anyway, he broke up with me at a time of great stress in his life because for him, the way he explained it to me, with everything going on in his life, he did not feel he could also take on the responsibility of a submissive, and we were long distance. And with now that I've got all this time and space between when that happened and now, first of all, I'm much better off. I've got this great relationship, but I can see where that makes sense, you know, and I tell you now, if you're dominant and you don't think you can handle this responsibility, you need to be very upfront and clear about that, right? But it happened at a time when he was going through some major, major life things, and he, I believe, at the time, at least with me, was of the opinion he should not share how he felt. And the few times he did share how he felt, I was on the phone with him one night when he sobbed because he was scared about what was happening with his family and things going on that he had no control over. My impression was always that he was very embarrassed that he allowed himself to share those kinds of emotions. And I think that that was part of, not all of, but part of our downfall. We were not the right match for him to want to share those emotions. Maybe it's because he believed that he wasn't supposed to. Maybe it's just because I was not the right one for him. I think, have you ever been with somebody you're like, ooh, I don't want you to know that much about me? Or they find out something like really deeply personal about you and you're immediately uncomfortable, even though they don't do anything bad with it. You're just like, oh, that was beyond my comfort zone. You know, when you're not with the right person, that happens. But not being able to, or wanting to, or being willing to share those very stressful times and bad times is going to be the downfall of a relationship, because those times are going to happen. You are either going to have to commit to keeping your relationship extremely casual, which there's nothing wrong with. If that works for you, then do it. Or you're going to have to sort of have some, you know, honesty with yourself about, is this person the right person for me? Because I don't even want to tell them when I'm going through something bad. I don't feel comfortable when they know something that personal about me. Those are things to think of on either side of the slash, y'all. Okay. That's not just a dominant thing. That's not just a submissive thing. That's what's this connection? Am I willing to share all the negative as it happens? Am I not? If I'm not, what do I want this relationship to be? Casual or over? So I can find the person that I am willing to share those things with, because those things are going to happen. I don't care if you've had a streak of like 2 years of a great life, eventually shit happens. And sometimes it's just, you know, an aging parent. Sometimes it's a crazy accident. Sometimes it's your work downsizes. It's completely out of your control. It's not something you did, but life still happens to you. So, you know, I never, ever think people should bottle up emotions. I don't care, kinky vanilla, none of that. That part doesn't matter. Bottling up your emotions can lead to bad, bad things. But in a DS relationship, you know, submissives are supposed to be open. We're supposed to tell our dominance everything. We're supposed to, you know, you can't control us or top us or have this power exchange with us and do things that are healthy for us unless you know everything there is to know. Well, guess what, y'all? I cannot serve my dominant unless I know what's going on with him. And the same is true of most submissives. We cannot take care of you if you will not let us, okay? And that is part of the DS dynamic for those who want it. If you do not want it, make sure you figure that out and work that into your relationship and negotiate how you want this relationship to go. But if you're looking for a loving, long-term, lasting relationship with your current spouse, with your girlfriend that or boyfriend who will become your spouse, or just for however long it lasts and you have no intentions of getting married, cool, you know, you need to understand that this is how this will be a more healthy relationship. And at the end of the day, that's what I want for all of you. I want you to have tons of kinky fuckery, and I want you to have a healthy DS relationship, whatever that looks like for you and your partner and works for y'all. But regardless, you're gonna have to admit when things aren't great. So there, I said it. Okay. I think my ranting has run its course. I think that's all I can say about it. I'm pretty sure there are dominants out there who completely disagree with me. That's okay. I'm pretty sure John Brownston's going to look at me later when he listens to this in the car or maybe during editing and go, really? You told him I did all that? Yes, Daddy, I did. Because the best dominant I know on the planet is John Brownstone. Yeah, I might be biased, whatever. And if he can do it and we can survive and make our own relationship stronger, what has made us stronger is going through the shit together. Okay, the good stuff is great. We love the good stuff. We love the kinky fuckery. We love when we're laughing and he's pulling my hair and he says good girl on the show and I just like melt and woo, that's great. But what has built us into this partnership that is a long-lasting thing is the crap we've gone through together, because that's what's brought us together, because we have chosen mindfully, willfully chosen to be open and honest, good or bad. So there, that is my wisdom for the week. As always, if you completely disagree with me, I'm perfectly willing to hear you out. Okay. Leave a comment on the show notes page or shoot me an email. You can find me on FetLife. I'm Kayla Lords nearly everywhere. So if you're on FetLife, go for it. I will say, cause I am talking primarily to dominance in this show, if you are a male dominant and you, want to friend me on FetLife, you either have to already be a friend of John Brownstone, Southern Sir is who he is on FetLife, or you have to ask, you have to realize I'm going to ask him before I friend you. I have friended dominance that he is not friends with. But he always looks over a profile first because that's how we do things. If you're female, I don't care what your role, your identity, I'm almost always friend females, but yeah, if you're a guy and especially if you're a dominant, I'm going to go, here, Daddy, what do you think? Is this okay? And he has turned people down. So just letting you know. But if you become friends with him and I see that you're a mutual friend, I automatically friend you because you've already gone through the daddy test to me. So we're good. But like I said, if you completely disagree with me and think I'm completely batshit crazy, you can tell me. Just be respectful. I'm cool with that. If you have any questions you'd like us to answer on the show or just questions that have come up from this episode, send those along too. We always answer you directly. And then if we mention on the show, we'll keep your anonymity. We don't. The few people we have done a shout out to were people we knew, like they had a blog or they were like, yes, thank you for promotion. I want more people to read my stuff. But for the most part, we don't do that. That is it for this week. Hopefully next week it'll be me and Daddy again. I think we make better shows when we're together. I certainly have more fun and usually he does something that makes me squirm. That is always fun. Even if it's a bad squirm, all squirms are good squirms. Anyway, keep it kinky, y'all, and we'll see you next week.